Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at Brown Jason. Joined once again by the boys, Dr. Eric Eager. How are you doing this evening, my man?
Hey, I'm doing great. Got some papers to grade, but aside from that, there's some nice action on here in the background, so you can't lose.
All right. And Luke, how's it going? Taking a little break from breaking down the Rams to come on with us this evening. How you doing, my man?
Pretty good. Yeah, I'm just having a lot of fun watching those too. They're a cool team. I'm really excited for this game.
Good stuff. I guess, yeah, you get to talk, probably actually get to talk a little bit of smack before this one to some people who actually care.
I know one Rams fan.
Okay. Well, before we jump into the topic that we kind of agreed previously that we were going to talk about tonight, you dropped an awesome piece today at Purple PTSD, kind of looking at how the Vikings should go through the process of making the decision between Case Keenum and Teddy Bridgewater, maybe a little bit differently than I'd seen, you know, really anyone else really go at it. So I guess if you could just kind of walk us through the piece, take us through the premise, and then we can have a quick chat on that before we jump into talking about some offensive line stuff.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about just sort of the logic of really any decision, and this is a pretty good example that we're kind of in the middle of right now, but any decision where you kind of have to decide whether or not put someone in or employ a strategy that you don't know how it's going to turn out. And there's a really good principle in economics of like game theory and a good example called the prisoner's dilemma, which you can learn all about in that article. I really like to explain that to people. I think economics is super interesting and it's explained right. But I wanted to kind of use that as a way of like laying out, you know, we don't know how good Teddy Bridgewater is. You know, the team might have a pretty good idea of how they've seen him practice and stuff, but we don't know. There's a lot we don't know about him. And you can still approach the decision kind of chalking him up to an uncertainty. You can still approach the decision in a way that like makes sense without trying to evaluate or like guess how he's going to do a game speed and all these other kind of certain factors that people have been talking about. So yeah, go check that piece out. It's kind of laying things out in a more like accounting for all possible outcomes sort of way. And essentially by the end of it, what I tried to lay out was whether he's good or bad, there's enough upside to like, even if he's bad, just like learning that and understanding that and I'm not having a controversy. There's enough upside there and a low enough risk where it's worth putting him in sooner rather than later just so that you can have your team better set up for a possible playoff run.
Yeah, and I really like the way that you went at it. And I guess since I have both you guys on, one of the questions that I wanted to ask you guys in terms of, you know, making the decision with you know, Teddy Bridgewater going in, Case Keenum going in, would this be something that you would approach a little bit like, you know, you're trailing in a game and at some point you're going to need to get a 2-point conversion? Like, I feel like this is one of those things, and just me looking at it, that it's better to find out sooner rather than later which way that you need to go. Like, am I looking at this the right way, or is this some of this that, you know, you just kind of need to ride things out with Case Keenum for another couple of weeks, make your decision? Or is it better to find out if Teddy can or can't play, you know, right away, even if it means that, you know, it might be bad in the short term for you?
I can't really like that. With the 2-point conversion, you need 15 points, and I do it now. I need like 11 or something, do it now, so you know what you're dealing with and where you're at. I really like that way of thinking about it.
Yeah, yes. What are your thoughts on it, obviously, Eric, knowing that, you know, Case... I mean, in that first half against Washington, I think he probably played the best half of football he's ever played in his entire life. Obviously, he came, you know, back towards the mean a little bit there in the second half. But I guess, what are your thoughts on really how things should be approached? Not necessarily from just strictly a player evaluation standpoint, but maybe just from a larger scale, looking at it from just a strategic standpoint.
Yeah, I think the majority of people who, you know, watch football, study football, play, coach, would, you know, kind of go against what I'm going to say, which is like, you know, you should kind of, whether or not you can win the game with two scores, or, you know, whether or not you need a field goal or not, that kind of thing. Try to go for the most points you can on a given drive, and then, you know, take your chances later. And, you know, I think that that's, you know, that's embedded in a lot of the things that, you know, folks do. You almost never see a team go for 2-point conversion. You know, when they're down 9, they'll generally, you know, kick the extra point, save the 2-point conversion for later on. And that's unfortunate, I think, because I do think that you just give up, especially in a league where scoring is up, scoring opportunities. So, you know, trying to, you know, figure out what you need on those scoring opportunities is probably more important than sort of waiting it out and then wondering, you know, after a missed 2-point conversion, sort of wondering, oh, could I have tied the game or not? I also think, like, a lot of teams, for example, will kick the extra point when they're up by 7, as opposed to going for 2 and trying to bury a team by going up 9. Those are things that I very much find appealing in terms of, you know, kind of like strategies and things of that nature. So I don't know. I'm of the same degree. I think people could actually employ game theory within football a lot better than they currently do, for sure.
That's awesome. And you know, Luke, you know, being the humble person that he is, you know, he undersold it a bit, but the article is really, 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 really good. It breaks down really, you know, again, it's more about the process and really determining, you know, what your upside, what your downside, using a bit of game theory to really help you make the decision that, you know, potentially could have the most upside for the team. And so link to it in the show notes. I highly suggest that anyone listening to this go out and read the piece if you haven't already, because it is a very good one. And so, you know, with that, I'm going to make this really clumsy segue into the main topic, the main thing we wanted to talk about in tonight's show, which is, you know, offensive line play and the actual importance of offensive line play when we're talking about the success of an offense, because that's one of the things, especially as it pertains to the Vikings this year, that's really been, you know, bandied about a lot, is that a large degree of how successful the Vikings have been this year is really attributable to the fact that the offensive line is so much better than it was, you know, in years past. And so, Eric, I'll flip it to you to kind of get us going on this one here. And obviously, you know, working at PFF, you have access to a lot of data that really would help in kind of that offensive line evaluation. How important is offensive line play overall? I mean, we saw the Cowboys get taken apart because Tyron Smith wasn't in the game. Like, how important is offensive line play when you're talking about, you know, fielding an offense that is good, or, you know, above average, or really good?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. I think the answer is very complicated, because we all would agree, especially Vikings fans would agree, that offensive line play matters, right? The last season, you know, the Vikings were very much a sieve on the offensive line, and it basically tanked their season. And yet at the same time, like, if you look at the numbers, if you look at, like, things like PFF grades, offensive line play, whether that be run blocking or pass blocking, are kind of down the list a little bit. So if you look at, like, how well the team passes the ball, how well the team catches the ball, those sorts of things are actually more important than pass block, you know, pass blocking and run blocking. But then there's a little twist to it too, I think. And statistically speaking, it's actually more advantageous to go from average offensive line than it is to go from an average offensive line to an elite offensive line, which is sort of, you know, kind of interesting, right? Because it's very, like, you know, it's very hard to sort of, you know, it's very hard to like tease that average, right? I think it's far more people to say, okay, let's draft Matt Khalil in the 4th pick overall and hope he's elite, right? And, you know, but the benefits of going from TJ Clemmings to Riley Reiff, who I would consider an average, to an above average tackle, as we've found, are so substantial. And then, of course, and we'll talk about this, I think, maybe a little bit later, is that the differentials in how, you know, how valuable different positions are also very interesting. So, yeah, offensive line play certainly matters. And as you said, the Cowboys, you know, finding out how bad it is to go from elite to bad. I mean, that's a huge drop off. So, yeah, it's a very interesting topic to study for sure.
Yeah, I really find it interesting that, like, a bad offensive line can do more damage than a good offensive line can actually help you. It's like there's this kind of ceiling to the impact that an offensive line can have. I guess anecdotally makes sense. And if you're giving up a bunch of pressures, you're sabotaging the offense. But if you aren't, the offense still has to function behind that. And you still have to have a quarterback that can throw out of those screen pockets and wide receivers that can, you know, run their routes and stuff. So I find that really interesting. It's just so counterintuitive. Like, you say, you know, hey, one team has the 25th best offensive line, one team has the 15th best offensive line, and one team has the 5th best offensive line. You would expect those to kind of be, like, evenly affected teams, and they're not. And I find that really, really, like, a fascinating quirk of offensive line play.
Yeah, and it is funny. And it's something that aligns with, you know, I guess a bit of research I was doing early in the year when I was kind of trying to determine the impact of, you know, the offensive line upgrades the Vikings were going to do. When I was trying to assess, you know, how Sam Bradford's season was going to go. And it was one of those things that I actually sent Eric a DM because I was kind of surprised, actually, to find that the relationship between offensive line play and quarterback play wasn't really as strong as it's often portrayed to be, you know, in the media. It wasn't the correlation between the two was something that I really expected to be, you know, a very strong one, and it wasn't that. And so I reached out to Eric to find out, you know, if I'd messed up the numbers, and he kind of let me know, like, no, that's at the extremes. Yes, it is something that, you know, a TJ Clemens, as we well know, will destroy your offense because you don't have time to really do anything. But then once you get into that kind of middle of the road, the gains kind of go away once you have, you know, competent skill players, competent quarterback play, et cetera. So that was something that I found really interesting. And it's one of those things that I think you can see, you know, play out, you know, to varying degrees of success, because I think that, you know, the theory of your offensive line doesn't have to be great in order for you to have, you know, functional or even a good offense is something that I'm sure someone with some kind of a background in Seattle, some kind of a numbers background in Seattle, kind of laid out for them, because it seemed at some point they went very aggressively in Seattle away from the we're going to have a great offensive line and we're just going to get weapons. But over time, it seems that they've gone way too far to the extremes to where they ended up having to go make moves to kind of try anyway to bring it back into the middle. So, yeah, like you said, teasing it out and finding that middle of the road spot is really the thing there. And I guess, you know, Eric, as you think about, you know, how teams might look to optimize something like this as they move forward, I guess, what are your thoughts on really the best way to construct an offensive line to maximize that value for your team, especially as, you know, if you can draft them all and hit on all of your offensive line draft picks, hooray. But obviously we know that's not going to happen. So if you were going to go at it and try to construct the, you know, the optimal offensive line, what would be your strategy for doing so?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, there are certainly positions that I've heard people and then, you know, talk about within the NFL, but also you heard it, you know, written about and things like that. And, you know, there are positions where, you know, for a right-handed offense, for example, the team certainly like can hide. And then there are some positions where the team sort of let the guy out on an island. So left guard was one of those where like the idea was that, you know, because most quarterbacks are right-handed, you know, the center will shave left after the snap on passing plays. And then the guard sort of more helping out the left tackle. So that left guard guy is, you know, not necessarily blocking people one-on-one as much. And so that's sort of more of a throwaway position. You sort of look at the way the Vikings have constructed their offensive line. That seems to hold true with Nick Easton kind of being the weakest link on the offensive line. And, you know, whereas right guards are sort of left on an island by themselves more often, they're also, you know, when teams are right-handed in the run game, they sort of like, you know, in terms of run blocking, bat position is super important. And so I like sort of dug into the data, and we have, you know, expected points added models. We also have like each player on each play is graded. And in the passing game, we give guys only negative grades if they don't do their job. So it's a little skewed. And then through normalization, we give them positive grades if they don't give up pressure. But like, basically the idea is that, you know, in pass blocking, a negative grade by a left guard is the least influential on an offensive line on the team that they're playing for. And it's not really particularly close. The next most important is right guard, followed by center, followed by right tackle. And then as we, I think of all hypothesized, left tackle has been, you know, a negative grade by a left tackle is the most negatively influential on an offense. You know, pretty interesting. I think that comes from the fact that, like, not only are sacks given up by left tackle, you know, pretty influential, but those are like the ones on the blind side where strips can happen and sort of turnovers and those types of things can occur. Interestingly, in the run game, the tackle is the most important position as well. Right and left tackle about the same, center third, and then both guard positions are basically the least influential in the run game. But what we found there is actually the correlations between grades are actually important there too. So there's all these like combo blocks that really matter as well. So that out, and so, you know, if you're having difficulty, you know, finding certain positions over other positions, the data would certainly suggest tackle is probably the most important, followed by center. And then if you have to sort of slough off on the guards, and you know, interestingly for the Vikings, that's not really how they've approached free agency of late, right? With going after Alex Boone and the like.
Yeah, I guess like because of the way the offensive line is constructed now, you know, you have Riley Reed kind of comes up for a while, and like, maybe you want to look at replacing Mike Remmers soon, but like I've seen mock drafts where there's all kinds of like I've seen mock drafts with guards being mocked to the Vikings in first round all the time. And if you say Isadora is going to be the starting right guard or whatever, you know, are we going to spend our first round draft pick on left guard? And if we are, is that unwise because of, you know, the kind of low impact that they can have even if they're playing at their best? Because like, not only is left guard least impactful, but as we just discussed, good offensive line play versus not bad offensive line play is also not that impactful. So are we really going to hunt for a superstar on the offensive line, or should we wait for the third round and kind of get one of those middle-of-the-road guys like we did with Elfline and Isadora?
Yeah, and I guess that raises a very good point, especially as Vikings fans, because one of the things that was criticized fairly heavily for Rick Spielman was the fact that he, you know, outside of, you know, going Matt Khalil, who was drafted early, he tended to look for those interior linemen, you know, very late in the draft and kind of go with a quantity over quality type of strategy. But, you know, based on what you're seeing, you know, with the numbers, Eric, I guess was Rick Spielman kind of doing it the right way, just kind of, you know, hit with some bad luck in terms of injuries to John Sullivan and things like that, or should maybe he have adjusted a little bit earlier to go after that center position that is a bit more important a little bit earlier, like he did, to find a player like Pat Elflein?
Yeah, I mean, part of drafting is just drafting the right guys, and then part of drafting is luck too. So, you know, I think the TJ Clemmings one, I think the process of drafting him was fine. He was a good football player in college. He just didn't work out. I think the process of drafting Willie Beavers, not so much, right? Like his college football PFF grades were not great. So he kind of ended up like expected. You know, for a long time, teams were not drafting interior linemen in the first round. So I think the Vikings were sort of following suit there. And then, of course, they just whiffed on a left tackle, right, with Khalil. So I'm not exactly sure in terms of, you know, whether we should knock them so much, but you know, they also have had a difficult time finding a quarterback over the last, you know, basically decade. So they've had to use two first round picks on quarterbacks during that time as well. So first round picks a team can have, and a lot of times they've like sort of moved up to get guys like Patterson or Smith, and then they, you know, their subsequent picks are like gone then. So, you know, I think part of it is just drafting the right players. I think development is also a key issue. You know, they got rid of Jeff Davidson as the offensive line coach. after the 2015 season. Sperano seems to have, you know, done the job this year, and last season he was very criticized. So it's kind of an all encompassing thing. You know, they signed the wrong free agent in Andre Smith. You know, and then, you know, we got some bad luck on Mike Harris, right? I mean, Mike Harris had a really good year in 2015, and so what are you supposed to, you know, what are you going to do? Brandon Fusco got hurt. You know, he was having a good career, and then he got hurt. So I think with the Vikings kind of now in the future, now that they've demonstrated the ability to put together a competent offensive line, I think I'll chalk up the previous few seasons to luck, right? I mean, there was a 2,000-yard rushing season amongst one of Rick Spielman's GM years, right? So it hasn't all been bad up front for them.
Yeah, and the kind of the when you were talking about kind of the importance of the different positions, that seemed to be kind of in reference to the passing game, which generally speaking, if you're talking about an offense, the passing game is the more important part of the offense if you're trying to have a very strong offense, which is something, again, as Vikings fans, I think we should know very well from the Adrian Peterson era. But is there a position that is, you know, I guess wildly more important when you're talking about the run game from an offensive line perspective, or are they all fairly kind of equally important when you're talking about having a successful run game?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends upon the scheme. You know, if you're a zone team or a kind of a power team or a gap scheme team, but you know, in the run game is not necessarily particularly important to offenses, as you said. So I wouldn't go ahead and build my team to build a good running game. And then, so you know, in that respect, I think it's relatively moot in terms of how you, you know, go ahead and build the offensive line. I would start with the pass game first and sort of see what happens with the run game as a corollary.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I guess, Luke, did you have any questions or any comments you wanted to make pertaining to kind of what Eric's brought up in terms of which positions are more important, or, you know, based on what you've heard, you know, how you would go about, you know, attacking an offensive line rebuild if you were, you know, given the job as GM?
Yeah, one thing that I see debated a lot during like free agency time or draft time is like left tackles getting paid so much more than right tackles. And that seems like a little bit of a market inefficiency to me, because the difference between left tackles and right tackles in terms of like value added, left tackles add a little more, but like it's still close enough to where like the contracts are very disproportionate right now. The left tackle market is a nightmare. We saw last offseason, like, people paying up the nose for Matt Khalil and Russell Okung, and like, he's proven to be bad players. And the right tackle market is still probably more inflated than it should be, but far less so. So if I'm going to go out and have to get like a premier free agent offensive lineman because my offensive line is bad, I think I would go after the right tackle market more, because it just seems like I'm going to get a little bit more bang for my buck. And I also think centers are really, really important, if only for this sort of unquantifiable factor of centers who can like call out protections correctly, and especially if you have a young quarterback, take that off his plate. That can be really important too. So I would probably go for a good center and a good right tackle, and hope that I can hit on a left tackle in the draft, or hope that I can get one that's maybe more of the middle of the road, but serviceable, and you know, hope that I don't have to do like a bunch of guaranteed money and let myself into a bad player like what the Panthers ended up doing with Matt Breida.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me, I guess. Yeah, Eric, you in line with where Luke's coming from on that one?
Yep. Yeah, I think you know, I think we have to, when we look at the data, when we look at, you know, statistics and how they, you know, how we try to build teams, I think we have to look at what the, you know, the most predictive things are, and, you know, build from there, and then kind of work around any inefficiencies that would come from that.
Well, all right. I feel like, you know, we've covered most of the bases on the offensive line piece, but there's definitely, I can't let Eric escape from here without getting his kind of preliminary take. I know you can't give us all of the goods, but by most accounts, the Rams seem to be a better team than the Vikings in most systems, you know, DVOA, et cetera. The Rams are ranked ahead of the Vikings. So I think the line, someone on Twitter posted today, the line post opened up with the Rams as 2-point favorites. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I saw the Vikings as 2-point favorites earlier, but you know, in terms of looking at how to handicap a game, you know, being the home team is generally worth something like 2.5-3 points. So basically what the odds makers were saying there is that the Rams are a little bit better than the Vikings. I think what you have to do when you're trying to look at a game like this is to dig deeper into like what the Rams, you know, resume looks like. And they have to beat the teams in front of them. So, you know, I'm not going to negate the strong, you know, play that they've had against teams like the Giants, against teams like the 49ers and the Colts and the Houston Texans without Deshaun Watson. But, you know, that stuff matters. When they've played teams that are a little stronger, you know, they played Dallas, they beat Dallas on the road. That's a impressive win. When they played Seattle, they lost to Seattle at home. They lost to Washington at home, right? So there's something there in terms of, like, the strength of schedule thing being a thing. Rams roll the Vikings this week. I think they're pretty legit, but I think the jury's still out. As far as the Vikings are concerned, I think – it all depends upon, you know, how healthy their defense is and if their defense can, you know, really adjust to this sort of innovative offense that the Rams have. And I don't think that their defense, aside from Aaron Donald, is particularly talented, but Aaron Donald's like probably the best player in the entire league. So they're going to have to neutralize him. I think they're weak as a run defense, especially, you know, having is one of those sort of myths in the NFL. Mark Barron is a safety playing inside linebacker, so that's a huge deal. So I think the Vikings will be able to run on them. I think that 2 points, you know, Vikings 2-point favorites. I'm pretty, you know, bullish on the Vikings in that one. So for a person inclined to bet on the Vikings, you have my blessing, I guess.
That is what we like to hear. We have Eric's blessing to Yeah, that feels like confidence in the Vikings going into this game, Eric. I like that. Like it.
Yeah, I mean, hey, if they can keep, like, let's say perfect scenario, right? We all have tipped our hands here. They're down 10-7 at halftime. Keenum's thrown a couple picks. But the defense is, like, held serve a couple times. Put Teddy in the second half. A couple scoring drives. Teddy, you know, the LaMarcus Joyner revenge tour, right? And, Vikings getting the win column there.
LaMarcus Joyner revenge tour. I love it. Luke, what are your thoughts? You know that you're out there, so you know, I guess what's the vibe, what's the buzz out your way, and what are your thoughts on this matchup with the Vikings and the Rams?
I'm excited for it just from a strategy perspective, because I like the Sean McVay versus Mike Zimmer thing, and I've been looking at what Sean McVay does, and a lot of Jared Goff's deficiencies have come because that offense is a lot of like slow developing stuff, spelled by a bunch of screens. So they kind of, I feel like they do a bunch of rolling plays to like invite you to blitz and then they screen at you. So if the Vikings can efficiently defend those screens and you can get enough of like the lateral movement from linebackers to keep the production on screens low, and if the Vikings can get pressure with four, which I think they can, those long plays are going to start to get Jared Goff to struggle under pressure. His pass rating under pressure isn't that bad, but it certainly takes a big, like, 30-point dip from when he was under pressure. He's been having a great year, but I think, I don't know, even though, like, in terms of production, I would say that, like, against a neutral team, the Rams would have a better chance of beating that neutral team than the Vikings do. But I really like the way the Vikings match up just because of the strategy the Rams take. It feels like they play right into our strengths.
Yep, that feels fair. Like, this is one of those matchups that, you know, and I'm not going to lie, before we played the Redskins, I was probably a bit more confident in this matchup and that I felt like Zimmer would be able to get pressure on Jared Goff and kind of knock him off his game a little bit. I am interested to see how much of the strategy that was employed by the skins that the Rams pick up in this week, because it seemed like there were many occasions where the skins were able to outflank us. And based on just kind of the preliminary clips that I've seen, you know, people post, it looks like the Rams like to do a lot of those things as well. So it will be interesting to see if the team was able to tighten up on those things, because, you know, Chris Thompson one-on-one on a screen pass is a lot different deal than, you know, Todd Gurley one-on-one on one of those screen passes. So, I hope we got some of those things figured out so that we're not leaving our guys in those types of situations this week.
Yeah, and, you know, Jared Goff this season is second in the NFL in passer rating when using play action. So I think, you know, it's pretty clear that, you know, that it's important for the Vikings to, you know, stop the run on first and second down so that they're not in these advantageous positions to be throwing, you know, bubble screens and things like that to the Robert Woodses of the world. I think that the Vikings, you know, as Luke said, don't match up on the outside. Like, they have three solid receivers, and I think it's, you know, a really good testament to their front office to go from a team that could not move the ball last year to, you know, a team that's been very good on offense this season. But it's not, you're not talking about receivers that are, you know, that are going to stretch them too much. So I'm pretty, you know, like I said, bullish on the Vikings this week.
And oh my goodness, I just went and looked. Green Bay is really the underdog this week at home? Baltimore? Oh, wow.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, but you know what? You're talking about two backup quarterbacks again. Like, those are tough games to bet.
It's true, but that's just, I like seeing it. It's just, it's very surprising to me.
Yeah.
All right. I feel like we covered everything that we were going to cover this week. I guess, Eric, I know it's the usual stuff here, but, you know, when can we find you talking to people about, you know, how they should gamble their money this week?
Yeah, so I'm on, Pro Football Focus. The ELO ratings will come out tomorrow. And then on Friday, my buddy George and I are going to do our spread picks. We'll also be on the PFF podcast. For those of you that are fans of 1500 ESPN, I'm on the Purple podcast. I think I re-recorded sometime today. So it'll be sometime. It'll be out sometime this week. I'm talking about, you know, some of the underneath the hood reasons why Teddy Bridgewater is a better prospect than a lot of people think. I'm sort of looking at him, you know, when kept clean, and sort of looking at him on third and long. So not things that are sort of different than we've discussed, but, you know, the debate is going to probably go on until he's the starter. So sort of, you know, chatting about that. So yeah, pretty fun week.
Yeah, looking forward to that. You and Collar have a good rapport, so I like it when you make those appearances on Purple Podcast. And and Collar is someone who also likes the numbers. He gives you a lot of latitude to get in there, so I'll be looking forward for that one as well. I guess, Luke, obviously you had the piece dropped earlier today. What else can we be looking for from you as we get deeper into the week?
Yeah, as always, I'll be on the Purple Journal over at Purple PTSD, and I will be live tweeting the game from Purple PTSD's Twitter account, as always. Hopefully, by the time the Purple Journal comes out, I'll have a little bit more research done in there, and I'll have a better idea of how I would attack them if I were the Vikings coaching staff, because I think that's always a really fun episode to go down. And yeah, you can just catch me on Twitter and argue with me about stuff.
Well, all right then. Well, gentlemen, thank you once again for coming on recording with me tonight. Eric, good luck grading the papers. Luke, have fun out on the best coast, and I will talk to you gentlemen again soon.
Take care.
All right, see you guys.